Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. And we welcome you to Talking.Golf here on the first weekend of February as the calendar rolls right along. We are between sponsors still here on Talking.Golf. We want to give a shout out to one of our former sponsors, Iron Jock. Iron Jock, of course, has advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. That technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. You can learn more about Iron Jock at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. And Gary D'Amato, alongside, we give a shout out to Iron Jock because we're going to be getting some nifty Iron Jock Wisconsin.Golf polos for the 2023 season, just in time for when the weather warms and the tournament coverage begins, because I think I speak for you. The Iron Jock shirt that we got last year was well-used and often used and very comfortable, especially in the humidity that Wisconsin summers tend to throw at us.
Yeah, for sure, Rob. They make great stuff. I've got two Iron Jock shirts. Looking forward to getting that. Hopefully I have one for every day of the week one of these days, because they're good. They're good shirts. Great on the golf course on hot days.
Well, I'm not sure it was all that humid when you were down in Florida, but we took last week off as you were making your way back from the Orlando PGA Merchandise Show. And as we talked about it in the preview and leading up to it, there was a lot of great stuff there. And I guess, Gary, let's first start in general. You had a column this week about the technology and how it's kind of gone to the next level. What was your biggest takeaway from what you saw at the show?
Well, Rob, I think my biggest takeaway was that the show was almost back to the level that it was at 6 or 8 years ago, when it was, must-see golf industry stuff at the beginning of the year. You know, last year I did not go, but I understand from people who went and said it was really about half the show that it, you know, that it was in its prime. Still coming back from COVID, and but this year I think it was 85% of the vendors were back. All the big OEMs, you know, almost all of them were back. Titleist, Callaway, Ping. So there was a real excitement and vibe, Rob, that that I used to feel years ago when I went to the show and hadn't felt for a few years. And I think it's back, and I think it speaks to the golf industry as a whole that it's made a complete comeback from COVID.
Because before the pandemic, I know that some of the big manufacturers were starting to shy away from all shows and just let their name carry their product. I think that's a great sign that Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, and the like were there. Did you read anything into that?
You know, I think there's just a general, such a positive vibe in golf right now. And it's very expensive for those big OEMs because they spend tens of thousands of dollars, Rob, on their displays, and their booths are enormous. But I think my guess is they felt they had to be there because golf has made such a great comeback. And, you know, the convention center was nearly full, and they probably felt obligated to be there. And it was good to see that they came back.
Now, we do one golf show as a company each year. That's the Chicago Golf Show coming up in a few weeks down in Rosemont, Illinois, at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. It'll be interesting to see who all returns to that one. That's another one where, you know, that hasn't been held now since 2020, I think, just before the end of the start of the pandemic. And so the last 2 years, that hasn't gone on, but it's been a favorite of ours because it kind of mixes Wisconsin vendors with Illinois vendors, and it's got that upper Midwest vibe to it. I think that'll be a good test too, Gary, to see whether, we're back at full strength regionally as well as nationally.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to the Chicago show, and the Milwaukee show, Rob, is been pushed up a few weeks by Jay Royal, who owns the golf show, Milwaukee Golf Show. It's February 15th through the 17th. That show was typically held in, I think, mid-March. So he's moved it up several weeks. I think that's good. I think I'm anxious to see both what Milwaukee and Chicago, what the turnout is, both in terms of vendors and people coming to the show to experience the booths and the vendors.
It would be nice if some of these vendors that were at Orlando would be able to make the rounds to all these shows, but instead we were able to see a lot of the I guess cutting edge technology, for lack of a better term, through your eyes. I mean, we talked heading into it, the PuttView X, which helps golfers read greens. I had a conversation yesterday after 7-3 putts in an opening round 80 for the club championship about being able to read greens with grain on them, with one of my playing partners who's a cagey veteran at doing that. But well, I tell you, I don't think there's a golfer in the world who wouldn't use a little help reading the greens. What did you find out about that neat product that has the great visuals to it? Because it looks like the guy is kind of, you know, seeing the putt, and it's almost like through, you know, 3D goggles, where he's, you know, able to know what's coming. I never know what's coming on that last break, and that's why I can never find the hole with a birdie putt.
Yeah, I tried them on in the booth, Rob, and experimented them with a little bit. It's a Microsoft made headset, and it's paired with the software that's produced by PuttView, the company called PuttView, and it's augmented reality. In other words, it's not virtual reality; it's augmented reality, because you see the green, but then it's augmented by, you know, things that you see through the lens that you wouldn't otherwise see. And I found it really, I guess it was hard to get used to, first of all, putting the goggles on and seeing all the stuff that you see, but something in the way the software works and the way these goggles are made, they have lasers and cameras, and it's actually able to read the green for you. And you can press different virtual buttons, and you can see like a grid overlay of the green. You can see the path of the putt. You can see a corridor. In other words, if you want to die the ball in on a breaking 20 footer, or you want to ram it in, there's like a banana shape, you know, and you just follow those contours at the right speed and your ball's going in the hole. And I found it amazing. I can see how, you know, putting coaches would use it. I can see how maybe college teams would use something like that. But at $14,480, Rob, it's out of my price range. Maybe you can buy one, but I can't.
I don't think I could sneak that one past Gina in the credit card. No, not at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it trying to develop a muscle memory type sensation? Because you obviously can't use that on the golf course.
Yeah, you can't use it in any kind of competition or during even a recreational round. I think you'd look pretty foolish. But yeah, I think it just shows you how to read greens, and maybe trains you how to read greens by putting the grid on the green, and then you can see the breaks that you might not see, you know, with the goggles off. So I think it's a teaching tool. How effective it is, I don't know. I would love to work with it for a couple of months and see if it, you know, improves my green reading.
The other thing that you wrote about in that story too was, to me, it feels like we're getting, you know, really knee deep and beyond in data with and now with the D-Wiz wearable swing studio. You describe it as a smart watch that provides accurate real-time data on the golfer's swing. I saw on Instagram today, Joe Forsing up in the UW Green Bay hitting facility with a little TrackMan, you know, measuring swing speed and projected, you know, carry distance. And I saw a video last night of Grace Suter down at Loyola Chicago reaching 100 miles an hour with swing speed, and wow. Mom drives out there, and, you know, she's very, very strong for a young lady her size, and it just gets better and better with that. But I mean, at this time of year, it's all about, you know, there's not much you can do, especially when you're not out on the course. So in our part of the country, in the Midwest, the data collection seems to be at full force. What do you think this watch is going to do? And have you, you know, you and I are, I guess, are the, I think we're as much Joe average everyday golfer as there is in terms of what we get out of our games. And
yeah,
is that something that we could benefit from, or is this just kind of one of those neat little things that like the Apple Watch that some people have just to say they've got one and they can track their steps, and in this case, they can track some of the other, you know, quote unquote, valuable golf data?
Well, I know I could benefit from it, Rob, because one of the many, many things, one of the data points that it spits out is the length of your backswing. I've always had a very short backswing, and, you know, you can program X amount of inches to get your hands up in the air, mm-hmm. on your backswing, and then it'll tell you with a with a little electronic pulse in your wrist if you reach that point. So if you don't reach that point, rather. So, you know, it will train you to wow. lengthen your backswing that way. So that's one of the many things it can do. You know, it measures hand speed at impact. And obviously, the more hand speed you have, everyone's really wrapped up in ball speed and club head speed. But obviously, the more hand speed you have, you know, the faster you're going to swing it. But the guy I was talking to, the president of the company, said, you know, I was talking about my short backswing. And he said, well, if you swing longer and faster, you know, physics say the ball's going to go farther, right? So my big thing, Rob, this year is going to be to try lengthen my backswing and get back to where it was, you know, maybe 20 years ago.
See, and a couple weeks ago when my daughter was in town, her husband, who doesn't play golf, was just riding along, and he took a couple of videos of her swinging, and then he took one of me swinging and showed me the video of me swinging, and I looked like I was in super slow-mo. And then on the next two tees, I tried to swing out of my shoes thinking, okay, yeah, to your point, the faster you swing the club and, you know, with the various, you know, metrics, the longer it's supposed to go, especially if you, you know, take it all the way back and take it all the way through. And then I'm, you know, pulling it left, fading it right. And yesterday was probably one of my best driving rounds ever, where I think I hit almost every fairway. And I've got this short little backswing, you know, I don't know if we've ever compared our backswings, but I'm trying not to get all the way to parallel, and so that I can, you know, keep that ball in the green grass. Cause this time of year in Arizona, green grass in the fairway far outweighs the dormant Bermuda, which becomes kind of a 50-50 proposition in what kind of lie you're going to get, and then what kind of reaction you're going to get when the club meets the ground. And so that's working. I fear that, you know, for me, and again, I think this is why we have golf shows, is because some of these things for some people are going to be great, for other people, you know, keep it away from me.
Yeah. Too much information, you know, can lead to problems, analysis, paralysis by analysis. Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's a point where there's just too much things in your head, but you know, I've played with you a few times, Rob, and I've always thought you make a great turn, and you know, you get your hands up pretty high, way higher than mine. And you're still pretty flexible for a slightly older gentleman, Rob. So I aspire to turn like you can turn.
The other thing that's in the story that I found very interesting was you've got this, what is this, Phi Golf? How do we pronounce this? Korea-based, and it's basically a home golf simulator. The video makes it seem, Gary, like you know, we're going to take over the living room. And I think you and I both might have people in our house who might put up a stop sign to that idea.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about ordering one of those, Rob, speaking of putting up a stop sign, because you don't need a net. It's a simulator in which you don't need a net. You don't need a mat. It's a little short swing stick that's about maybe 2.5 feet long. Oh. And it's got a sensor on it. And then you download an app, and you can play courses on your television, on your smart TV. And it's a Korean company, and all the people in the booth were obviously Korean and spoke sort of halting English. So it was hard to get, you know, real information from them. But I see it's on Amazon for like $249, and really? And that's something that really intrigues me, because I don't know how accurate it is. I'm sure it's not as accurate as TrackMan or, you know, PRGR, one of the better Rapsodo, one of the better simulators, but just to be able to play golf courses on your TV and be able to swing a something that's like a golf club in your living room, I think would be pretty cool.
The electric muscle stimulation training with Miha Body Tech caught my eye, because yeah. About the same time we posted your story down at the softball diamond, we had one of the local PT places. You know, when you live in a 55 plus, the big things are retirement communities are restaurants and physical therapy people. And because that seems to be all people do, is go and eat, do their activity, and then try to rehab from whatever injury they got. But one of the guys that I play softball with is also a golfer, and they were using some sort of gun to stimulate, I think it was his hip muscle. And that was on a Saturday when we have these, you know, some of the softball sponsors down to the field to, you know, kind of talk about what they do. And then on Monday, he went out and he said he hit the ball 30 yards farther than he ever has in the last 2-3 years. And now wants that person with her, you know, little, you know, it's like a massage therapy gun to be. But muscle stimulation, I think we, sometimes we don't listen to what we're hearing in interviews, but Tiger Woods, in one of his many returns, when we would come to Torrey Pines each year and talk about the status of his body, would talk about trying to get up at like 4 a.m. to activate his glutes or whatever. And and I'm going, all right, that seems kind of excessive. I'm if I've got an 8:30 shotgun, I'm getting up at 7:30 and I'll hit 10 golf balls and then get to the tee. But it takes me, four holes to get to where I feel like I can actually make a turn. Now I understand all this. I mean, it's all with all this discussion about how this impacts the body, and this guy, the softball guy, big guy, making this turn with the help of, a little stimulation in the hip. I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, well, early in the morning, I'm just trying to activate my eyelids at that point, Rob. But I went through this Miha Body Tech. And it's fascinating stuff because some of our listeners might know what TENS stimulation is, a TENS unit. It's a little electrostimulation that you put on an aching back or a sore muscle that electrically stimulates the muscle and brings blood to the muscle. And it helps in the recovery process. But for this thing, I got it in an actual suit, Rob. I had to go in a dress in a bathroom, change all my clothes and get into this special suit. Then they put a weighted vest on you. And they wrap you in these bands, and then they attach electrodes to them. And then once they turn on the juice, you feel like a tingling in every muscle group in your body. And while they're doing that, you go through a series of motions. My workout was 12 minutes, Rob, and I was drenched in sweat. And it was like a 4-hour workout. And they said, that the normal workout's 20 minutes and you do it once a week. That's all you need. And it will strengthen all your muscle groups. So it's some of this stuff is just, it's Buck Rogers science fiction stuff. It's really cool though.
So as you make your way around the showroom floor, I mean, did anything catch your, first of all, did you bring anything home?
Yeah, I brought some stuff home. Nothing outlandish, but like I said, I might order that Fi Golf. I'm thinking about it, but I saw a lot of the Wisconsin people we know from Wisconsin, vendors and club professionals were there. I ran into a bunch of guys, Meridian Putters, which I wrote about a few weeks back. They were making their show debut. Ryan Duffy from Brookfield. And he had a good show. He said a lot of interest. And then the Hockey Stick Putters, those guys from Kenosha, Caliber Golf, they sort of dominated. There's a big indoor putting green where all the putter companies, have displays, and you can grab putters and go out and use them. And they had a really good show. I saw Tyler Morse, our friend from Prestwick Golf Group and Club at Lac La Belle. So it was fun walking around and running into Wisconsin folks. Everyone was glad to get out of the weather.
Yeah, no question. And where do you see everything headed? How did people feel? We've had some conversations off and on, not necessarily on the podcast, but about, what we're expecting golf wise this summer. Seems like the momentum, the energy in the room in Orlando bodes well for 2023. But I know that everybody continues to, hold their breath that, the economy will be strong enough to support a robust golf season again this year.
Yeah, I think, there's some caution out there about what might happen later in the year, depending on what the economy does. But at the show, it was full steam ahead. Everyone seems to be really bullish. It was a very positive, electric vibe, a lot of buzz about new products, and tons of golf professionals buying for their golf shops and stocking up on stuff for the year. So it looks like it's if the show is any indication, it's going to be another great year for golf.
And what was the verdict on the groundhog? Unfortunately, I think one of them at least saw the shadow. So 6 more weeks of winter, right? That's kind of a you're gonna have to live with the snow for a while.
Yeah, 6 more weeks of winter, but whether he saw a shadow or not, I always expect 6 more weeks of winter at this time of the year. where it's not going to be 75 degrees next week, that's for sure.
No, not at all, not at all. You're listening to Talking.Golf here on Wisconsin.Golf. We're in between sponsors here on the podcast. You can always reach out to Megan Augustine, our sales and marketing guru, and she can hook you up with sponsorship of either our podcast or any other areas of Wisconsin.Golf that you might want to support. We're coming out of the winter, which means we've got a lot of results going up to our website each and every day. And we'll talk about that in a second. But we also want to give a shout out to the 2023 U.S. Senior Open, one of our former sponsors. Don't forget, it'll be held Tuesday, June 27th through Sunday, July 2nd at Century World in Stevens Point. Ticket options and packages are now available and can be found at the U.S. Senior Open website. That's ussenioropen.com. And we'll see you there at the end of June through the weekend preceding July 4th. I believe July 4th on a Tuesday this year. So it'll be kind of a prelude to the middle of summer. And if you can get the long weekend, we wholeheartedly encourage you to do so and spend it in Stevens Point. Gary, another sign of spring besides the groundhog this week is the start of the college golf season. The Badger women's golf team will open up the season here on Monday and Tuesday down at the Florida Atlantic Invitational in, I believe it's Boca Raton, Florida. And it's the start of Division I college golf. I know the Badger men playing what was described to me as a friendly, to use soccer, against Purdue in a match play setting this weekend, kind of an exhibition down in Florida, but they'll be back down in Florida next week for another tournament. And but we start, you know, with the Badger women, and they kind of had an up and down fall season, but Emily Lauterbach's last season as a Badger, and I expect good things out of Todd Erlein's group. He's got a good mix of young talent with a couple, you know, good veterans. Gia Feliciano, a junior, had a really strong fall season out of the number five position and actually led the team in scoring. So all that kind of conspires to hopefully give the Badgers an opportunity to get out of the gates strong and have a great season.
Wow, time flies, Rob. Emily's a senior already. Man, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like yesterday she was winning a high school state championship at Harland Arrowhead. And
yeah.
And of course, you know, we've watched her, you know, grow in confidence and certainly grow in success in the summer events at the Wisconsin State Women's Open, the Wisconsin State Women's Amateur. Both she and Bobby Stricker have kind of gone mano a mano here the last couple of years and kind of set a high bar for the others. But it's kind of cool because I think it's also brought a level of awareness to women's golf in Wisconsin, and a lot of the top junior golfers, high school, college golfers are using some of these in-state events to get to the level that Emily's gotten to. And now she has conditional status. I believe she said she was 255, 225 on the Epson Tour priority status. Once she graduates, she'll be able to, you know, in theory, get, you know, as many as 8, 9, perhaps 10 events based on the similar players in that position a year ago, which would be really exciting because I think she's got the game and she's certainly got the length to compete out there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, you were talking about Grace Suter's hitting 100 mile per hour swing speed. I was at demo day last week at the show. I was watching Lexi Thompson, and her swing speed was 104, and you know how far she hits it. So I find it very impressive that Grace is swinging at 100 miles an hour. That's really impressive to me. Just one of many impressive golfers we have to watch this spring.
Yeah, and cause I in the video that I had on my phone, I could see that when Grace hit the drive, they, you know, again, into the simulator screen, it was going to go 248. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, Gary, but I'm not much longer than that.
Well, I'm shorter than that. So, yeah, that's and probably most golfers are, because the guys who say they hit it 270 probably hit it 240. And the guys who say they hit it 240 probably hit it 220 in actuality. Yeah. But yeah, you're in the 250 range when you catch one, I think, Rob, and I'm in the 220 range when I catch one. So I'm way behind most people, unfortunately.
But it's exciting that the college season is getting started. You know, we've already had one event on Golf Channel. You know, there's so much to be gained right now, especially on the men's side, with this PGA Tour University and you know, changes now to the, you know, the PGA Tour qualifying schools coming back. I think it's a really good time to be a young golfer in this country.
Oh, no question about it. With the opportunities that are in front of young golfers. Yeah, no question about it, Rob. It's exciting time. It's exciting to see what the tour is doing. You know, I think there's opportunities for young golfers that might not have existed a few years ago to try to make it through the very various mini tours and qualifying tours and get on the Corn Ferry or get onto the Canadian Tour and go up from there. And then of course we have the big events on the PGA Tour. And I think it's, you know, I'm looking at Pebble Beach right now, and it's an exciting time for golf. No doubt about it.
So the Badger women at the FAU Paradise Invitational, it'll be held at Osprey Point Golf Club in Boca Raton. And then Marquette and Wisconsin both competing on next weekend, or probably, I guess, it'd be a week from Monday and Tuesday, down at the Puerto Rico Classic. And that's at Rio Grande, Puerto Rico. And it's neat, Gary, when both the Badgers and the Golden Eagles are in the same field. They do a lot together. And what I think is neat is, you know, you and I have a really good feel for the two rosters there and the potential that's in place on both teams. And it'd be neat to see where, you know, they stack up coming out of the fall season. You have a vibe as to, you know, obviously Marquette's always in the hunt in the Big East Conference. And I know the Badgers had a great breakthrough performance under first-year coach Mike Wilson last year at the Big Tens. I'm not quite sure what to make of, you know, because they both had some, you know, changes in the roster over the, you know, the last 12 months with Hunter Eichhorn leaving Marquette and the Badgers bringing in a whole bunch of transfers and growing the roster for a year. There's a lot of unknowns, even though we've had a fall season to kind of gauge them.
There are a lot of unknowns. You know, I just looked at both rosters today, Rob, and there's a few names that are, you know, new to me. I don't know much about some of the guys on some of the guys coming in, especially the freshmen and some of the transfers. And it's the post Hunter Eichhorn era at Marquette. Big shoes to fill there, a three-time Big East Player of the Year, McKay Hill Award winner, which goes to Marquette's very top student athlete across all sports. So I don't think it's a rebuild, though, by any means for either program. I think they're both going to be pretty good again this year.
I would agree. If you look at the golf stat rankings heading into the spring season, Marquette 47 and Wisconsin 79. You know, they were a little bit closer together, I think, going into the fall. And that's not to, you know, those things change on a weekly basis, you know, and especially now that we've started competition again. The Badgers, right in the middle of the pack ranking rise, they're, you know, Illinois continues to lead the way at number seven. The Badgers at 79 are a little bit behind Michigan State at 55, Indiana at 66, Nebraska 73. And then right behind them is Minnesota at 82 and Iowa Rutgers 91 and 92. So it's pretty competitive in the middle there. I know on the women's side, I think they had six NCAA qualifiers a year ago. And so you'd like to kind of at least get your ranking up into that, you know, six, seven, eight range in the conference heading into the Big Ten championships. And then oftentimes a strong showing at the Big Tens will net you, you know, some consideration from the committee when they make those at-large selections.
Yeah, as you said, Rob, you know, we're just starting the spring schedule, and I, you know, there's going to be a lot of movement, especially the first few weeks. You know, let's see where those programs are, and say after they've played three or four tournaments, and there'll be a little shaking out in the rankings. And I would expect Wisconsin to move up a little bit and Marquette at least to hold serve.
And we had it in sweet spot last week that Jenna Anderson, the surprise transfer out of UW Green Bay, now knows where she's going to go for her next college golf stop, Utah Tech, which is the school formerly known as Dixie State University. When they went from Division II to Division I, they also rebranded their entire university name. They won't be eligible for anything postseason-wise, including their conference championship, until Jenna's a junior. It's similar to the situation at St. Thomas. There's 12 reclassifying schools across the country based on the research we did looking into what's going on at Utah Tech. I'm befuddled. You know, and we've got another recruiting story coming out in a couple days on, or maybe even as early as tomorrow, on Lauren Lupinick, who committed this week to Western Michigan. And, you know, great opportunity there for Lauren. I'm sure she got a great, scholarship offer from the Broncos. But I also know that she was, you know, high on the list of UW Green Bay for the class of 2024. You know, and I've had many conversations with Lee Reinke about his recruiting philosophy. You know, he is staunchly only recruiting Wisconsin kids or kids with Wisconsin ties. He's got two kids coming in who grew up in the state, went elsewhere. It'll be coming back to the men's team. It'll be coming into the men's team this coming fall that, you know, went to high school out of state. But, you know, it's hard when you want to do right by Wisconsin kids, and then you're just not getting that buy-in from the Wisconsin kids. Boy, you know, until Jenna Anderson transferred, I thought Green Bay had the best chance to go to an NCAA regional of any school that we've talked about here this afternoon.
Yeah. Does Lee talk about his philosophy of why he doesn't recruit other states, Rob? Does he think that he just has a better chance of landing Wisconsin kids than he does kids from Michigan, Illinois, Iowa?
Well, I think he knows that from a competitive standpoint, the work that's being done through the Wisconsin PGA Junior Foundation, there's enough kids in Wisconsin every year to be able to fill a roster with competitive kids who know, you know, who can handle the jump and distance to Division I golf. And I think that's the biggest thing. He also recognizes that Marquette and Wisconsin, both on the men's side with Marquette and Wisconsin and the women's side with the Badgers, you know, only recruited a handful of Wisconsin kids over the last 10 years. And so that from a volume standpoint, there are a lot out there. Now you've got other kids like Pearson Hunt and Harrison Ott who have gone to, you know, major places, but you know, he's looking to recruit opposite the Dakota schools that have come in. And then it becomes kind of a, you know, a really whether the kid and their families are going to, you know, nitpick or go over the options with a fine tooth comb. The areas where Green Bay lacks right now, and Lee knows that he's trying to improve it, is the schedule. Their conference championship is played at one of the greatest courses, the facilities in the country, in my opinion, for something like that. And that's Mission Inn Resort down at Howie in the Hills, Florida, where they've got LPGA qualifiers and an Epson Tour event. You know, it's a great place. But, you know, the road there is through, you know, a lot of, you know, tournaments in Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky. Whereas the schools out in the Dakotas, because of their proximity to Arizona and California, can and some of the warmer weather spots in Nevada, Utah, you know, can go there, and it looks great on a schedule, and I think it's, you know, in some cases it's helped sway some kids to leave the state, but boy, you know, we've seen, you know, all the D1 coaches in the state of Wisconsin really go, you know, be a presence at junior tournaments and amateur tournaments. And Lee has been at as many as any coach at Marquette, Wisconsin. And so, you know, I hope that we continue to see, you know, the junior golf community, you know, understand what they're trying to do at Green Bay, because now you also have another option for women's golf. And we've already had the option for men's golf at Division II Parkside. And we wrote this week about A.J. Powell out of Appleton North being the first recruit for Carly Weir-Wee-Schwartz down at Parkside, and then what Carly's trying to do down there. And she's very close, I think, to getting a third and maybe a fourth kid in for this fall who could make them competitive from day one. And then with that class of 2024 for girls being so deep in Wisconsin, you'd like to think that both Green Bay and Parkside would benefit. I think if they don't, it'll be hard, because and there'll be some frustration there, because those are two coaches that can make any kid on that list better. And so I think some of those junior golfers need to really consider how green the grass is on the other side of the state line before they look beyond Kenosha or beyond Green Bay in the recruiting. But you know, the juices get flowing, Gary, when the season starts. And you know, you know how hard these coaches that we work with all the time are working to make their programs better. And it'll be interesting to see how this spring pans out. The Green Bay men in the Horizon League poll, I believe, were picked to finish seventh or eighth. So low expectations there. And I believe the GB women, now that Jenna Anderson has transferred, is picked to finish third. They finished second a year ago, and I thought we're really on the doorstep of competing for that regional berth out of the Horizon League this spring had she stayed.
Yeah, you know, talking to Mike Wilson, UW's coach last year, I remember him telling me one of his big goals was to improve the schedule from both an attractive, you know, tournament venues to strengthen the schedule, to going to places where there are more rated teams and ranked teams. It's hard to do, and I would imagine for a school like UW-Green Bay, it's really hard to break in and get in tournaments where you're competing against ranked teams. Not that you want to do that maybe if you're UW Green Bay every week, but it's nice to it's nice to go against, you know, schools that are better than you, because I think it makes you during the regular season, I think it makes you, your players improve. It helps them. So I think schedule building is probably, it's probably as hard as recruiting, I think, for a lot of schools, Rob.
Well, and it was in talking to both, you know, Coach Wilson and Coach Ranky, you know, they've had conversations with each other, and at least on the men's side, you know, there's talk of, you know, perhaps one day, you know, Green Bay getting into the Badgers tournament, their fall invite, and it'd be great to see the women's side, because, you know, Emily Lauterbach faces all those gals from Green Bay all summer anyway, and as do some of the kids like Mackenzie Hahn, who, you know, graduated last May, who play in the state events. There's no reason why that you know, if you're going to give a slot to a mid-major from somewhere, anywhere in the Midwest, that you wouldn't even look to your own state to grow the game and better golf. So I'm hoping that both Todd Erline and Mike Wilson, you know, strongly consider doing that. Because there's a real push to, you know, at all levels to make things better. It's why Mike Wilson and Steve Bailey at Marquette, you know, sitting on the Junior Foundation committee for the WPGA, you know, push to convert the Morgan Stanley Tour Championship into an elite invitational that's going to have the top kids, hopefully, from, you know, the various bordering states from around the Midwest down at Washington County Golf Course in Hartford. And again, help Wisconsin make golf better, not just in the state, but around the state. And in turn, you know, it'll show yet another great course that we have here in Washington County, and, you know, the level of golf, and give these coaches that are here in the state a chance to recruit, you know, at courses and, you know, in their backyard without having to go to necessarily a U.S. junior or, a PGA junior national type event to, you know, try to scour and find someone who might be interested. So there's a lot of good positive stuff going on. And again, with the start of the college season, it'll be exciting to see exactly, who makes some breakthroughs this spring and who doesn't. That Badger breakthrough last spring was huge, I thought, for Mike Wilson.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think they finished fourth, right, after finishing last the previous 2 years.
Correct.
Huge breakthrough. And something, you know, that's something that a program needs, is that, especially under a first-year coach, to make that kind of improvement says a lot about what the coach is all about, what his staff is all about, and how he operates. So I'm a big fan of Mike Wilson. I'm a fan of all of our coaches and our colleges in our state. I think they're all doing a very, very, very good job.
Yeah, absolutely. And another story we had earlier this week, another top recruit going to UW Lacrosse. So Division III golf getting much more competitive as well. And of course there's no regional stop to get to the national championship. You win your conference, you're going to nationals, and Whitewater going now for, I believe, the sixth year in a row this spring after beating Lacrosse in a playoff at the conference championship last fall. So we also have that to look forward to. Division III golf kind of getting underway late part of March, early part of April. And so we have that to look forward to. One other thing we wanted to get to this week, Gary, you had the Wisconsin PGA award winners, and these are men and women who really are the unsung heroes in our golf community, and a lot of great and well-deserved honors, leading with Westmore Country Club's Vince Pulizzano being named the Golf Professional of the Year. And again, these are awards based on their work on the job, not the score they post in their section events. And I tell you, Westmore has always been one of the leading clubs in the state, with Milwaukee Country Club, Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club, and all the, you know, 100-year-old courses that we have, or clubs that we have here. But Vince oversaw the 100th anniversary a couple years ago of Westmore when we had, I believe it was a state amateur there, and that was a great show. And what do you think about Vince's award and all these award winners, Gary?
Yeah, Vince is a pro's pro. He is. When I think of a PGA professional, I think of Vince Pulizzano. He's a very, very classy guy, very professional. The membership at Westmore really, really appreciates him. He's done some great things there, Rob. And the PGA Golf Professional of the Year is sort of a, I guess it's sort of a, it's not really a career award, but it's sort of, you know, it encompasses what a guy's done over, I think, a longer period of time, maybe than 1 year. And Vince has done a great job at Westmore. And, you know, two other award winners this year, Jake Wisniewski, who was assistant golf professional of the year. Jake works at Ozaki. He's the number one assistant there. And Jonathan Stewart at Sand Valley, who was the PGA Professional Development Award winner. Both those guys were assistants under Vince. He has sent five assistants on to head jobs or director of golf jobs or director of instruction jobs at other clubs. And that just tells you what he's all about. He's a great mentor to a lot of these young professionals who are coming up through the business.
And sometimes I think the team element of club and staffs is maybe underappreciated. In your story this week about the award winners, kind of quietly celebrated another, you know, great combination, and that would be Travis Becker, who's now at the TPC Wisconsin, named Teacher and Coach of the Year. But a lot of that was for his work done at the Beloit Club in Ironworks Golf Academy down in Beloit. And then, you know, one of his colleagues down there, Michael Tabert, was named the Youth Player Development Award winner. And to me, that's a huge award for Michael, because it shows that both the Boy Club and Ironworks are going to continue to be very critical and very important in the development of our young golfers. A lot of them have looked to that area of the state when Travis was there. And I think a lot of them are trying to see what TPC Wisconsin is going to look like from a teaching and development standpoint once it opens this year. But Beloit Club and Ironworks Golf Academy have really helped advance junior golf instruction here over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Rob. I'm fortunate to be on the Wisconsin PGA section selection committee for these awards, and going through the process was fascinating, reading all these guys' resumes. And then we met as a committee and made our final judgments on the winners. And you look at the resumes, all these guys who won these awards, but you're right, Travis and Michael, what they've done down at Ironworks with junior golf, with golf at all levels, really. I mean, they teach adults and women, and they've got all kinds of groups going through there, but in particular, their work with young golfers is beyond impressive.
And Scott Wilecki at Gretzka Park and Curry Park gets the PGA Player Development Award. And Andrew Barrett, who's now at X Golf American Family Field, the Bill Strasburg Award. I believe those are two other guys that have been kind of in cahoots the last few years. Andy's been with the Milwaukee County, hasn't he?
Yeah, Andy was at head pro at Brown Deer Park and moves on to X Golf. And so Scott Wilecki, who was at Curry and Gretzka Park, sort of went back and forth between those clubs. He moves up to Brown Deer to take Andy's place. So they've got a good pipeline going, a good professionals going in the Milwaukee County Park system.
It just seems, and from just, you know, getting done, you know, inputting some of the schedules for the year, Gretzka Park in particular is, I feel, is starting to elevate its status as one of the Milwaukee County Park courses. They're hosting several qualifiers during the year, in addition to what they normally do on the junior golf scene, you know, as co-host of the WPGA Junior Championship. And so I think, you know, Scott and you know, is going to, while moving to Brown Deer Park, is part of a crew that's really important. And then, you know, it just seems like, you know, from casually looking at Facebook and other social media sources, X Golf at American Family Field has really been well received as a place to go and swing the golf club during the winter months.
I think it has. I think it's going to do very well, especially during baseball season. But yeah, even in the winter months, I think people are going there to enjoy that multi-level facility. It's kind of interesting the way they've squeezed all the simulators into a space that was once a restaurant. But yeah, Rob, you mentioned Gretzka, and I think, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, Gretzka was not in great shape. I'm going to be honest about that. It was not in good shape. That course in particular has come a long way, and I think you're right. If it's not at Brown Deer's level, it is just a tick under Brown Deer at this point. It's really a fabulous golf course.
Well, we have a lot of men and women to be thankful for in the state, in the Wisconsin PGA section. And you can look at Gary's story for a full list of all the award winners throughout the state for their various efforts in all parts of their job. And, Gary, before we close, I also want to mention, if you look at our website under the scores, you'll see a lot of, under the latest tournament results, Tim Cantwell, part of a winning team at the PGA National Senior Junior Championship, one of the many winter season events for the PGA section members. Mick Smith of Summit and Jamie Christensen of Egg Harbor, also in the top five of that event. Mark Wilson playing on the Corn Ferry Tour this week, trying to get some starts in as he slowly but surely gets closer to 50. I believe he'll be 48 this year. And then we had a number of Wisconsin golfers or golfers with Wisconsin ties try to pre-qualify for the Monday qualifier at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which is being run down here in Phoenix in conjunction, as it always is, opposite the Super Bowl. But this year, the Super Bowl, from where I live, right on the way to the Waste Management. So I'm not sure how much of the Waste Management I'm going to get to see this year. But nobody actually got through, but a number of guys came close. Kyle Bengston, who spent a season at UW Green Bay, an amateur from Woodruff, I believe shot even par at his qualifier in Gilbert, Arizona. And then a guy named Michael Keller, who I'm not familiar with, from Hartford, played pretty well. And Taylor Kozer from Rice Lake, who's been in many qualifiers, he also shot even par. But at his qualifier, it took three guys shooting 65 to go on. If you shot 566, Gary, you're not in the Monday qualifier. Welcome to PGA Tour Golf.
No kidding. Is the Phoenix Open, is that an elevated event this year?
It is. So, and a lot of conversation about how all of, I think there were seven or eight of these qualifiers that each had about maybe two to four spots available for the Monday qualifier were full. And I mean, it costs, if you don't have some form of PGA Tour membership, it costs, I believe, $500 to enter. But you know, it was kind of like playing Powerball. You pay 500, you get through the Monday, happen to strike it rich and get through the Monday and make the cut at an elevated event. That's a pretty good chunk of change. That'll be a good return on your $500 investment.
Yeah, talk about catching lightning in a bottle, huh? Yeah, just get through the qualifier, make a cut in an elevated event, and your money woes for a couple of months at least are over, maybe longer, depending where you finish. That's pretty cool. Did you say you're going to get out to some of the Phoenix Open, Rob?
Going to try. We'll see. And it's amazing. Every day on TV out here, there's a different – touting a different event associated with the Super Bowl, which is just up the road at State Farm Stadium in Peoria. And then, of course, downtown, there's some events. It's going to be a circus here for the next 7 days. But I'd like to get out there. I did hear, you'll like this, I did get a text yesterday from Sandy Bing. I wrote about Sandy last year. She was one of the two women who were sitting next to the green when Aaron Rodgers was playing in the Waste Management Pro-Am.
Yeah.
And then he came over and kind of sat out the putting portion of that hole and chatted with the two ladies. And Sandy wanted to know if I knew if Aaron was coming. We obviously, you know, if you're watching the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, Aaron's getting a lot of airtime. And Gary, I got to imagine that while there's no Super Bowl to play for back in Green Bay, there's the Rodgers speculation is rampant, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I heard him say he's not going to San Fran when someone asked him for an update on the course the other day. So I guess San Francisco's out of the equation, but a lot of teams probably are still in the running if the Packers do wind up trading him. And I see he's a 10 handicap. I think his handicap has slipped a little bit, Rob. I thought he was like a 6 or 7 a year or two ago.
Well, and I saw him play last year at the Waste Management Pro-Am, and he could hit it a long way. And last year, I believe he was just coming off that loss. In the playoffs, and so he hadn't had much time to practice. And I heard him say this week on his weekly little social media show that he hasn't practiced much this week. But he hit a couple of really nice shots on the TV coverage yesterday. But we'll see. I was intrigued by the little banter between Twitter World and Devontae Adams. Somebody asked Devontae, "Whose neighborhood will Aaron Rodgers live in next year?" And Devontae said, "Mine." Which, you know, makes some sense. I didn't really think that Devontae Adams was going to Las Vegas just because of Derek Carr. I think he kind of felt that maybe that, you know, at some point there might be an opportunity to reunite with Aaron Rodgers. But you talk about golf and football. I saw somewhere where Devontae Adams lives at is at the TPC Summerlin neighborhood, which, you know, Aaron Rodgers could be, you know, have a golf course in his backyard and team up with Tay, and they could be a formidable duo on the football field. And Aaron's got more than a share of golf to play, you know, in the Las Vegas area.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the Packers are still probably holding out hope, or at least the fans are. I don't know if the organization is at this point, Rob. It seems to me I've read some stuff where online, and we're getting away from golf a little bit here, but the Packers are ready to part with him, apparently. So it's going to be really interesting to see the next couple of months when some of those contracts come up, some of the contract renewals and Jordan Love's contract, whether they, you know, they have to see what they have in him. So it's going to be interesting to see where Rodgers winds up.
It will. And as we wrap up Talking.Golf for this week, we want to remind you that the PGA Tour Champions is back in action next week. But Gary D'Amato, neither Jerry Kelly nor Steve Stricker in the field in Morocco. They are down to Harrison Frazier on the alternate list. They're four away from Mario Tiziani getting in.
Wow. Well, it doesn't surprise me that Steve's not there. He doesn't travel much outside the United States. He didn't go to the British Open a lot when he had he skipped that a few years when he had opportunities. So it doesn't surprise me that they're not there. That's a long way from home.
Long, long way. So we'll see what that brings. But with that, it brings us to the end of Talking.Golf. Gary, appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, and we'll talk golf again next week.